to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Tuesday, February 2nd month of the year, the 22nd day of the second month of the year of the 2022, and it's a Tuesday.
I love that we've convinced everyone that they're going to win their bets tonight if they involve any number two. Like, we woos, you got to do it. You're going to be rich. You're going to make $2 million. Like, it's perfect. We've done it.
Our next guest, I did some research during the break, was once number 22. Anthony Stewart, former NHL forward and current Sportsnet analyst. Maybe this is a good omen. What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, I'm doing well. My nickname was A-Stew22, but I have a bone to pick with JD here. You're talking
about
you're using pop culture terms, and you don't even know where they're coming from. You used the term hunky dory. That was an album by David Bowie. Did you not know that?
He didn't remember saying hunky dory, and neither did I.
I'm
listening to every word he says. I'm listening.
Yeah,
I'll be watching you.
Yeah, no, I know. You're basically the cops, but that's okay. You're the police. You're out here just listening to everything I have to say, going over it with a fine tooth comb, and then capitalizing if I ever make a mistake. This is an episode of The Wire. Like, you're McNulty up in the booth, and I'm just out here trying to live my life, but it's okay. You're just trying to take me down. I did not know hunky dory was a David Bowie thing. I'm about to say something that's going to piss people off. I think David Bowie stinks. I don't get it. I've never understood it. I don't understand any part of it. The only thing that I think is funny about David Bowie is that video of him and Mick Jagger that they have that song together. There's a music video where they're like, I think it's called Dancing in the Streets or Dancing in the Rain or something. And it's the most, I think, unintentionally funny music video of all time. But other than that, David Bowie has done nothing for my life. And I'm sorry, Bowie fans, but I don't get it. It's not for me. Maybe I'm too dumb.
Rest
I'll
in
accept
peace.
That.
Rest in peace, David Bowie.
Sure, rest in peace. Rest in peace. Nice Actually, eulogy. That's wrong. I like that he's in this cartoon that I like called Venture Bros. He's a figure in that cartoon. There you go. So that's
he's
my
a legend.
David
in every sense of the word, he's a legend. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. So you say. What's your favorite song?
The one that we just played here, The Man Who Sold the World. And that was a song by Nirvana. And I think most people don't understand that was an original David Bowie tune.
Hey, guess who didn't understand that? This guy who loves that song when Nirvana does it and heard that version and went, what's this? What's this?
I'd hate to see your playlist. You got
Nirvana.
Some Britney Spears Buddy, and some Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Come
you're probably doing the NSYNC dances in the mirror. I see you.
First of all, there's nothing wrong with any of those artists that you just outlined. They all have straight bangers. There's no question. Every one of those artists you just named has way better songs than David Bowie. I'll put their catalogs against David Bowie any day of the week. Britney Spears, Hit Me Baby One More Time versus that crappy version of a good Nirvana song. Yeah, I'll do that any day of the week. Bye, 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 Stewie. I want it that way. What are you talking about? Obviously, those
you
are
You know there's
going to
be a bunch of memes coming for you and gifts coming for you.
I don't not. Yeah, guess what? I've been through the fire. You've put me, ever since you put cracked out toothless guy with tattoos as my face, it's like you can't hurt me anymore, you know? You already went and used the ace in the hole. What else you got? You know, that's the way that I'm approaching this. Okay, so speaking of what else you got. The bleep are the Leafs going to do on the blue line tonight? Like, what are they going to do here? I could not feel less confident about what they're going to ice tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, I know Muzzin's obviously out. There's some reports that he stayed in Montreal last night. So let's knock on wood and hopefully he's not playing or he's not out too long. But does this spell the return for Sandin? And I think they just showed the hole that they have without him in the lineup. And I'm not sure the new defenseman's cleared to play right now just with his immigration issues. But again, you have to hunker down on defense and play a good team defense. And, you know, the one thing that I noticed from last night, there was a lot of old habits creeping into your game. And I just go back to myself as a player, and there's a couple of cardinal sins that good teams preach every single night. You can't be letting in a goal in the last minute of a period or the first goal of the period. You have to do whatever it takes to try to make sure that doesn't happen. And when that happens, you know, a team that has good culture, it's a really, really big deal where you probably do hours and hours of video to try to correct that. That is a team culture thing. You cannot let those goals in. So I think tonight Jack Campbell's probably getting the start. And I wasn't a big fan of a couple of the saves that Mrazek didn't make. And I think that's the difference between him and Campbell. It's not about the saves you made. He had a couple highlight reel saves last night, but it's the ones that did go in. I did not like the Anderson second goal. I didn't like the Hoffman goal, and I didn't like the Caulfield goal. So you get those games, those goals out of your game there. It's a, you know, possibly a 2-0 game or a 2-1 game going into the third period. So those habits are starting to creep into their game. But at the same time, it's more positive than negative with this Leaf group.
So it's interesting you bring up that team culture. Like, that was kind of the biggest question I had watching last night. You know, you come into this arena that you were embarrassed in last season by a team that obviously is having pretty much the most awful season of the salary cap era. And you have a lot to kind of prove, and you should be able to get up for a game like this. You should be wanting to end this narrative of the Leafs versus the Habs, and the Habs did all this stuff to you last year. And it just seemed like they had no bite. They just felt like they played with no pride. And is that something that the leadership team addresses? Is that something that comes from Tavares? Like, I know it's a blip. It could be one game, but when do you start questioning like the leadership and the core values of the team that just gets run over by awful teams?
Well, I think it just goes back to the whole culture thing, and I think it starts with the coaching staff and that accountability, right? And you look at the time of ice, it's a 5-2 game, and you have three or four forwards that are in the 20-minute ice time range, right? So I think that's a game now. You know that's a loss, so you got to give the third line a little bit more minutes. Fourth line guys, have a little bit more accountability, because if guys are going out there and they're -2 and they're -3 not playing well, and they're just getting thrown out there every second shift, that's not really going to correct those bad habits. And you know, I just remember going back to Atlanta where, you know, we were doing well for most of the season, but our habits just crept up on us and we ended up falling out of the playoff race. But if you missed a block shot or you were doing a flamingo, you ended up on video the next day. So let's just say that I was the star of a lot of movies in Atlanta because I was not blocking a lot of shots. So I think it's just little details like that. And I know this team is extremely talented, but watch a Colorado game, watch a Tampa game. This stuff does not creep into their game on a consistent basis. So again, there's a lot more positive than negatives, but we're talking about this group taking the next step and winning a round and contending for the Stanley Cup. You got to have that team culture to pay attention to those details that they haven't been paying to lately.
Yeah, and I think that's why people get scared and why people's anxieties come out last night, right? Obviously, team success has a lot to do with that. When you have a fan base that's as beaten down as Toronto's has been, you have a night like that, and it's a reminder of what happened last year in the playoffs, because it's the exact same team you did it against. And in a way, it's the way it happened, right? You're getting just outworked, and you can't just find a way to break through in this game. I wouldn't say that goaltending was an issue last year, but it's been an issue in the playoffs in the past, and you see stuff like this, it all combines, and you go, crap. But what do you make of Morgan Rielly and Tavares have said, yo, we need to defend better off the rush. They didn't say yo, but they did say we need to defend better off the rush. And then they don't do it. And here's the thing. I don't know how they're capable of doing it based on the design of the team. Like, they seem to have this deeply embedded in the team messaging, right? Like, we know how this works. When the team comes out and says, we need to defend better off the rush, we need to defend better off the rush, this has been communicated top down in terms of what they're going to discuss. But it is also something that the team has identified and addressed and is trying to work on. So you come in and you don't do that. You play that way. And then it ends up as your pregame and your postgame discussion. What does just that tell you about their ability to change?
Well, I don't know if it's very positive, but again, you're going to have to. You either want to go far and win a couple rounds, or you don't. And, you know, watch a Calgary Flames game. When there's any, you know, minor mistake or minor inconvenience due to systems with the Calgary Flames, they pan to the bench and you just see like the sense of disgust on Sutter's face, because he pays attention. He makes that team pay attention to every single detail. And I think with this group, it's more of a puck possession group. So you don't really want to chip into Swart because they want to, you know, enter the zone, do a little tight turn, make plays and possess. But you're talking about playoff hockey here, and that's why I think the Calgary Flames are a team that can really, really contend, because they're just always supporting the puck. They're around the puck. They're getting it in deep. You know, you're seeing Goudreau go in on the forecheck and get it. So I think it's just more of a philosophy where, yeah, you can do the video and talk about it, but you got to have that accountability. And, you know, you're talking about Calgary Flames. Monahan was benched for a year and a half. He was playing probably fourth line minutes there because they did not play the game the right way. So I know that's not the makeup, the genetic makeup of this group, but you have to take the next step. There's a lot riding on this season, but again, it's the exception, I think, right now, not the norm right now with this group. They have been playing some great hockey, but it's going to get harder, and you're seeing these trends now. You know, we're in game 40 to 60. When it goes from 60 to 80, it's going to be so much more tougher where you have to adjust, or you're going to be having more L's like you did the last couple nights.
Do you work for the Calgary Flames PR department?
I do. Hanging in the drone. Yeah, I got a free hanging in the dome with Jerome t-shirt. So yeah, I do. Yeah.
Well, one thing that you're talking about the Calgary Flames, and I'm joking, but they do have that grit factor and that type of play. But I don't know if it's, I don't see those people on the Leafs roster. Like, I don't know if it's a mentality thing or even a personnel issue, because who would you pick to be that person to do that? I don't see Tavares being that guy. I mean, Bunting, but how much relies on him and Simmons to be the guys that, you know, make a little bit of fire on the roster? I think that it seems like it's also a personnel issue.
Yeah, but it's not dropping your gloves and, you know, shooting it out of the air, then getting into a Donnybrook every two shifts. It's just, you know, giving a whack after, after a face-off, you know, going into a scrum, finishing your checks. And again, we've done a lot of ISO videos. There's a lot of guys turning away from checks. And again, I go back to, that's not the makeup of this team. They want to be puck possession, skill, specialty teams. But you have to have a team system like that. And that's why I say the Calgary Flames. I know I keep mentioning them because it's just a beauty to watch. Just everyone is in cohesion here. They're moving the puck, they're supporting the puck, the D, and you know, you're looking at the makeup of a roster. You know, the Ottawa Senators threw Gabranson to, you know, pretty threw him away for nothing. Look at him now thriving in a system where it's not about the personnel, it's just about the system. So regardless of who you have, if the guys are 6'2" or 5'6", you got to have that system that complements the group the best. So I think for Toronto, they got to find a way to adjust and have different styles. You can't just have one style of play and have success in this league.
Yeah, it's why I keep preaching their need for more versatility on the blue line. And that's what I hope that they end up getting in Lyubushkin. I don't know why I keep wanting to call him Ozhiganov, but that's a bad sign. I keep wanting to call him Ozhiganov. I have to fight that urge literally every time I say his name, which is really not.
But we talk about this, JD. We talk about this all the time, of all the guys that they got rid of that would probably be a good addition right now. And we're starting off with your boy Kapanen, a $3 million guy that can move in up and down your lineup. And say what you want about Ozhiganov at $4 million. I think he's looking right now.
He's got like no goals in his last.
I don't care.
Just admit it. Take the L, Stewie. God, it was 2 years ago.
Where's Uncle Leo? Where's Martin?
Yeah. Uncle Leo's a gold medal winner.
Yeah,
that's right. Uncle Leo is a gold medal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's out there beating Slovakia or whoever it was in the quarter or in the semifinals.
Beating the ROC, beating
Russia.
Yeah. Hey, Rock Nation. Yeah, I think that there's not going to be an overhaul come deadline time where they end up getting a bunch of different guys. I think that Hall, part of the reason why his season has been so terrible is that he got in his head at the beginning of the year that he was going to be a physical force for this team, and it wasn't really his game, and he lost it, and he could never find himself again. And I think that that's because this team desperately needs guys who can come in and thump somebody, who can go win a puck battle in a corner, who are going to change the momentum of a game with a hit. And I really, really hope that this defenseman, like, that he ends up being some of it. I don't know if they, because they're not going to get a ton of it. So let's just see if just a little bit ends up changing things. So, Tavares, want to talk about a guy who just, if we're saying the team doesn't lack bite, sometimes I always wonder that. If you say, okay, Tavares leads by example. Okay, he plays hard. There's no question about it. But I wouldn't say that his game is one that has a ton of bite. What do you make of the criticisms lately? Because they're starting to build up, man. You can't make $11 million and go, what, now 9-10 games without a goal? It's getting harder and harder and harder, especially when your line is being outshot routinely despite getting, you know, 70% of your draws in the offensive zone. Are we being too critical of Tavares? Is a little bit of both? Like, how are you feeling about the discussion around his play right now?
I think it's the Toronto microscope, right, where I think it just always shifts. And I think if this team was sitting probably at, you know, 72, 73 points, a couple points behind the Florida Panthers and Carolina Hurricanes, I don't think it would be shifting on to Tavares. And again, he plays solid hockey. I know he's a minus four this year, but he is at a point a game. This team has two, three, four players hovering at a point a game, and that is their job, to sort of perform and put up those points and keep them up statistically, you know, in this race here. So I think when the going gets tough, it's easy to point the finger at him, but he is a solid player, and you keep pointing to the contract. There was teams that were offering him more. So I know it's an easy way to sort of point the finger, because again, this team does have cap problems, but again, he is far from being the issue. But I think the question is, they need him to be the solution, and I can understand the criticism at that point, that perspective for sure.
See, that's the thing though, Stewie, is like, of course he's a fine player, right? Like, he has 17 goals. He's a point of game player. Like, everything you point out is absolutely true, but he also only has 11 even strength goals in 50 games this year, and that isn't who I thought the Toronto Maple Leafs were getting, and I certainly didn't think that's who the Toronto Maple Leafs would be getting in his, what, age 31 season. And the point I made about Tavares earlier is, if you're looking for fine, then yeah, of course he's going to fit that bill. If you're going to fit him as good, then he's going to fit that bill. But the thing I'm noticing night in, night out with him is that there's not force. It doesn't feel like he's a force out there ever. And that to me is scary, because yeah, we're 50 games in and I haven't felt that. I've felt that for a long time now, and I haven't felt too many nights where I've went, man, he was just a beast out there tonight. He dominated tonight.
Well, again, there's four horses on this team. So if he was one horse, I think he'd be a little bit more relied upon, right? But again, if you're having an off night, you have the Nylanders, the Marners, and the Matthews. But, you know, you look around the league, what other player is performing, you know, two or three or four-year deals into their long-term contracts in their 30s that's really up there with the league scores and all that? Yeah, we want him to be Huberto and have 70 points, or a Leon Draisaitl. But again, he earned that contract, and you know, I think it's safe to say he is a complementary piece, not a main piece on this lineup. He is more you know, we talked about it last year. He wasn't scoring, but what was he doing? He was playing good two-way hockey. So I think for this team to go far in the playoffs, they need him more to play that two-way game, as opposed to saying he's going to be at a point and a half a game, you know, scoring every other game. So he's going to finish with 30 goals, you know, 60, 70 points. You know, that's good enough for me if it goes and it means winning a round or two. So again, it's easy to point the finger, but you know, in this market, there's one or two other guys I think that need to play a little bit better as opposed to Tavares.
Well, if he scores in the playoffs, it won't matter. None of this will be, it'll all,
well, yeah, we won't even be talking about it. Yeah,
no,
so let's wait till then. Good night,
well,
Toronto.
Okay, fine. Then you're going to what? You're going to pay for my salary while I don't work for the next couple of months, or what?
Just
what
be like, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
What do you think said, about that? We'll see.
Listen, you're okay with overpaying Tavares or paying him for no performances. Like, you'll pay me for no performance as well then. Like, that's what you're saying.
So you're basically saying, well, they at least need to make a move and then go offer Nazem Kadri all the money, is what you're saying in the offseason.
I will say this, is that they're if you look at the dominoes of things, just the way that they fell, if you don't have Tavares, like, I'm just playing this out for fun. If you don't sign Tavares, and I actually hate this discussion, but it's the first time I've really thought about this. If you don't sign Tavares, you don't trade Kadri in a panic trade, because you don't have three centers. And you go, hey, this is no longer a position of luxury. You're keeping Kadri because you're saying, well, we still need him. He's an integral part of the team. You're certainly not trading him for a year of Tyson Barrie and Alex Kerfoot. Mm-hmm. My God, it was such a horrible deal. I think he's got to be better. I don't know if he can get better. And if he can't, that's a terrifying sign. And you're such a player. You're like, he deserves the money. Don't take his money away. It's his money. It's like, yeah, okay, man. No, he still gets the money, Stewie. Don't worry about it.
Tomorrow's I'm paid by the PA, Ailish.
I know you are.
PA,
like,
not the Calgary Flames, the PA.
I was gonna say, hey, they already agreed to give him that money, and the contract's a contract, so he's getting paid no matter what. All right? Anthony Stewart, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for jumping on today.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
See you, buddy. Anthony Stewart, NHL on Sportsnet. He's everywhere. He's all over your Twitter accounts. He's sending out pictures. Basically, his Twitter is becoming very much my face
your
put
face.
On ugly people or weird looking people. That's what you follow him for.
That last one's good. Yep.
Yeah. Again, I think it's two things can be true. I think that if you start saying things like Tavares is washed, you go, well, clearly
okay,
not.
No.
Because he's getting a point a game. But if you're saying Tavares is worth every penny, I don't agree. I don't think he's playing up to $11 million. Even if you play the pandemic game of flattening salaries and blah, 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 they didn't pay for this. This wasn't in the cards. They didn't think at age 31 he would have this many nights where he couldn't carry a line. Again, the entire John Tavares thing is that he elevated those around him. And for most of a season, that has not been the case. Nylander has been good independently of Tavares. We looked at that last year. Nylander was amazing in the postseason, no Tavares, carrying a line on his own. Alex Kerfoot started the season really well, has not been that guy ever since. He is not elevating players around him, and he's not creating his own offense. He's got 17 goals, but only 11 are even strength in 50 games. That's not what you're paying for when you get an $11 million John Tavares. And I'm sorry, he does get the Toronto microscope. He plays in Toronto. You know where he agreed to sign? Toronto. You know where he's the captain of? Toronto. You know where he's from? Like, he should be well aware of these things. This comes with the territory. I'm sorry, man. Like, and for all of the people that say, and this is myself too, who go, would we be judging him as critically if Austin Matthews wasn't Austin Matthews, right? Where he's so dominant up there and you're comparing him night in, night out to one of the great forces in the league. No, probably not. But also, you get the benefit of playing with that guy too.
Right.
He's also on the same power play as you. He's also taking the hardest matchups above you. And he's the reason why you get to start 70%.
You should be doing even better because of that.
Exactly. So we are microanalyzing you to a different degree, but also your standard and your expectation should be that you are more of a force considering you get easier matchups and easier situations. You're on a historically good power play. Is that because of you right now, or is that maybe because of the two guys above you?
I don't like the narrative of like, oh, you know, there's four good guys on the Leafs, so it doesn't matter.
There's two guys that are unbelievable, and then there is a huge drop-off between those two guys and Nylander. Nylander can get up to
like
those guys.
It's no longer
level.
The core four. It's like the core two.
No, it's the core two. It always has been.
They're friends.
I know. It's yes, it's the core two, and then there are other guys that make a lot of money on the team. But that's just it. And Nylander is in the discussion because he makes so much less than Marner, and because when he plays at his best, he can replicate a lot of what that is. But no, Marner is different. People like to hate on the guy because he's also different in that he's from here. And so out of all the dudes who should have taken less, it probably should have been him. But whatever.
Get that bag, King.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you get that bag, King. Why should he take less? I just think Tavares has got to be better. Their backup goaltender needs to be better. He was brought in to be a 1B, and it has been a lot of bad, bad goaltending. Again, I mentioned earlier in the show that out of his nine starts, he's got only two with a save percentage above 500, or sorry, above 900. Like, he's among the worst goalies in the NHL with the qualified amount of starts to do that. He's just not been very good. I don't know.
So what if the Leafs go in and lay an egg tonight?
Nothing changes. Because here's the thing. They're a team that gets hot and they're a team that runs cold. And so this is the thing. When you make these intense takes about the Leafs, you end up sort of getting burned. When you say it's a Stanley Cup game against the Carolina Hurricanes with no fans in the building and they look great, and then they perform this way against the Canadiens, like this is the regular season ups and downs. This is being a fan of a team that people care about that has a real Jekyll and Hyde to them. So yeah, if they perform poorly tonight, I'm going to be frustrated, and it's just more mounting evidence that you shouldn't believe that they are going to turn things around this year. But this is a tough spot. I know they're big favorites, but it's a back-to-back, and you're asking a goaltender who's been up and down to kind of bail you out tonight a little bit. This is, if anything, this is a big Jack game. Like, Jack's got to be solid. He cannot have those Mrazek goals. He can't have the ones that he had the other night where it's, you know, the Leafs fall behind the eight ball and they're playing from behind because their goalies let in soft ones. So, yeah.
We'll see. I don't know if we can take two nights of that type of angst. I feel bad for, I bet, Steve Dangle this morning. Wonder how he's doing.
Oh, poor Stevie. He's got to be hurting right now. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's finish the show with all these texts. I'm sure we've accumulated a ton of them. I've gotten a bunch of messages in the DMs from a lot of you already, like trades, whatever. So, yeah, if it's Leafs you want to talk about, keep them coming with the Leafs. Whatever you want to do, you're the producers. It's Text Line Tuesday. Let's close the show out right. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, reach us on our socials at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, or text 590-590. That's next on the Fan Warning Show.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. JD and Ailish holding it down today. Blake will be back tomorrow. We won all of our bets over the last 2 days. We have just been reeling in the money. Everything's been good. No problems there. It's Text Line Tuesday. Yeah, 590, 590. Hit us up. It's the last block of the show. If there's anything you want to talk about, this is your chance.
I have one thing for you. Whenever you realize that you need something, do you immediately write it down?
Yes.
I never do.
Like, the second I run out of something, if I don't write it down, I will be aimlessly just wandering the grocery store. Like, I know I needed something. Like, the other day, I ran out of olive oil, and I forgot to write it down. And I just went through the aisles of the grocery store looking, like, was it this? No. What? No, this. And I forgot, and I went home, and I went to go cook something, and I had no olive oil. And I thought, well, I'm such an idiot. So, yes, you got to write it down immediately.
Yeah, see, I think that I'm like most men, where we don't write stuff down. That we always have this weird hubris and confidence. You know how there's that meme, the masculine urge to?
Yes.
You know, the masculine urge to, and I feel like not write a list is on our list. Like, I cannot tell you the amount of times I've thought to myself, oh, I need this thing, and I go, I'll remember. And then I'll find myself trying to remember exactly what that is. And basically my whole life, all I'm doing is walking around like, in a fugue state, trying to remember the things I need to buy and get, and I don't ever remember any of them until I go for that item and it's gone. Like, I've needed ketchup for like 3 months. I never remember to buy it because I rarely use ketchup, but it's just one of those things where I go, write down ketchup, go get ketchup, and I never remember to do it.
Would be the type of waitress or waiter at the restaurant that tries to be like, oh yeah, you want a club sandwich, no this, extra this, pickle on the side, no problem. And then you think that you're a boss and you don't write it down and you come back and everything's wrong?
No, see, this is where you're wrong, because I'm a good worker. I'm a hard worker, and I would grind to the best of my abilities if I was a server. I've never done a job half-assed, so I would totally be writing stuff down. I'd be listing the specials. I'd be working on my craft at night, you know. I'd be picking the brains of the other servers and bartenders, asking them. And I'd be trying to move up right away. I'd want to get noticed. I'd pick up extra shifts.
You would eat everything on the menu so you can give personal insight on why you like this, why you wouldn't like this.
You better believe it. 100%. Okay, so some texts. I never make a list and I'm out here trying my best, but this morning I woke up and I realized I needed like 10 things and I started writing down a couple things and I went, holy crap, I need a lot of stuff. And that's it. I'll make one list a month and I'll go, wow, this is so helpful. And then I'll never do it again. Anyway, the masculine urge to never write a list. What's in the text line?
Just to recircle our conversation from earlier about somebody you would want to interview or like have on your, if you were ESPN, Monday Night Football, whatever. Chris from Hampton. If the person can't be an athlete, I would have Kevin Costner in the booth with me because that guy loves sports and he is the Yellowstone.
That's the worst choice I've ever heard. Congrats.
Oh, wow.
Kevin Costner? What? What are you talking about? Are you my mom trying to get a date? Like, what are you talking about? Kevin Costner. This is the answer of a middle-aged woman. Like, that's who says that they want to meet Kevin Costner. He's so handsome in Yellowstone. That's you. You just did that. What's this guy's name?
What was his name? See, you say that, and they move off of it right away.
Yeah, whatever. That guy is weird. Kevin Costner, all-time horrific answer. Like, what are you doing? He loves sports? So what? Lots of guys like sports. Lots of guys. I don't know if you guys have noticed this listening to the show, but a lot of guys like sports.
Chris from Hampton.
Yeah, Chris from Hampton. Rough answer. He is Yellowstone. Woof. That is a horrific answer. So you and my mom, same person that you want to interview and hang out with for a day. My mom also thinks Kevin Costner's handsome. What's next?
Okay. Paul from Belleville. Unless Dubas adds some toughness, this team will be out in the first round again. They are still not tough enough to handle playoff hockey when the rules change.
One, I hate the whole rules change thing. Just call the game.
But it's true, sadly.
It is, but I don't want it. I know, it's just a frustrating thing. I don't want them to be calling ticky-tack plays, so there's an element of
What's a ticky-tack play?
You know, like little stuff with the stick or little grabs, little hooks. I just, sometimes it's a cheap call. I like consistency, but I also don't ever want to watch playoff hockey where it's the letter of the law, I guess what I'm saying is. And this is why it's important to have experienced refs. That being said, I don't really love it when a guy gets two-handed in the back and falls to the ice and the refs go, that's playoff hockey. I'm like, well, maybe at one point it was, but not anymore, so figure it out. Now we have HD cameras, okay? I have a huge TV. I can see it. I don't want you to be able to see it, too. It's a different sport. So, yeah, call the game. The second part of it is, though, I think that's the question, man, and that's the thing that we don't get to find out. And for some reason, I'll just put it this way. I'm not putting that take out there of they're not tough enough to win because I think that they have been getting tougher. I just think that it manifests itself in different ways. They're not going to be the rough and tumble team that you think that you want, but also the Leafs have tried that and they also didn't win, right? I referenced it earlier, but it's not exactly like Brian Burke came in here and revolutionized how hockey is done in the city of Toronto with truculence. Colt Knorr and Fraser McLaren didn't win Stanley Cups here, right? So I feel like there's a section of dudes that watched the cup run and had Wendell Clark, and they're like, that's the only way to do it. And you go, okay, all right, you loved him. But there is more ways than one to win. But I view Austin Matthews as a guy who's played with more toughness this season. I feel like he's unlocking a different part of his game. He's playing with a little bit more bite.
He's going face first into posts.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
Yeah, exactly. He's not afraid to mix it up.
Hungry for the net.
I think those are the things that are going to happen. Little baby steps with guys like that, where you want to see more intensity from your best players. And that'll change things. Because, yeah, the makeup of the group, it's going to require an entire massive overhaul during an offseason for that like component to change. I guess, again, too, it's all like an eye of the beholder thing of what you view toughness as now. Mm. And, you know, because this isn't exactly slapshot hockey anymore.
This is similar to that. Ryan from Caledon. The Leafs haven't had a captain with real grit since Dougie. The quiet guy in the dressing room who leads by example didn't work with Mats, and it isn't working with Johnny.
Yeah,
they need someone who's tougher than Brittany over Bowie.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, Mats Sundin was literally like one of the best closing goal scorers ever. He was tough as nails. That was his like entire reputation. But whoever this person that wrote this in is like, I don't think Swedish guys are tough. And no offense to this person. Like, I get it. I'm just saying that you got trapped in this moment with Doug Gilmour and Wendell Clark, and now you can't see anything outside of those guys. Like, you literally watch Mats Sundin score 500 goals with the Leafs, and carry, you want to talk about Tavares not being able to carry guys? Like, Sundin played with Ponikarovsky and Antropov and Kyle Wellwood, and he went out there and he dominated year in, year out. Guy played through injuries year in, year out. Look, like, check his film. Go look at Mats Sundin goals and look at the way that he was in front of the net, just eating it night in, night out. Like, the guy was an absolute beast. Beast! And you look at Doug Gilmour and you say, well, that's just the only way, is Mats Sundin was soft. Like, dumb. That's just dumb. So, no. I don't think that, only Doug Gilmour has played with grit, okay? Like, I don't believe that. The game was different when those guys played. And not only that, the Leafs have definitely had leaders with grit. But no, there's something to be said about this group right now in terms of sometimes their ability to dig deep and gut check it. And they haven't done it really in a meaningful moment. And until they do that, it's totally fair for the guys who love Wendell and Dougie and who will never let that go as the only way to win. By the way, all the Stanley Cups Wendell and Dougie stacked, you'd think like it was just like so many. How many Stanley Cups? Those guys just swimming in Stanley Cups that they won here in Toronto. That with all those rings that those guys ended up winning, that there's no other way to compare it to this group. So yeah, until those guys can win their way, then that group will always discredit them.
Yeah, and I think that's it's just different generation, I guess, when you grow up watching those guys, and it's a different type of hockey, though. So it's the game has certainly changed, and I guess no, your leadership is, style might have to change. Yeah. It's hard to say. Here's one from our guy. Oh, I see. Okay. I repeat, the Leafs haven't addressed the necessities of playing playoff hockey, and they will have to play a real playoff team this year. We need grit on the back end. Playoff goaltending is suspect, and I'm sure we will see playoff Marner again. Terry from Stony Creek. So we did let people air their frustrations and their anxieties this morning, like a therapy hotline on 590-590. It seems that a lot of people have, you know, honed into the lack of physicality and the lack of grit because, you know, last night it didn't seem like there was much emphasis on let's play with some pride, like let's hit someone when we're down 5-0, like we don't look like, you know, quiet on the bench. Like, I think I respond to a different type of leadership if you're on the bench. You know, players all take things differently. Are you going up and down, like hitting guys, being like, let's go, come on, like pick it up? Or are you, wow, this game's over, like, you know, this sucks, like let's get out of here and regroup for tomorrow? It's hard to know like what people respond to, right? It from a fan watching through the broadcast, you want that type of like getting frustrated a bit, pushing people around, saying like, let's go, come on guys, like this is awful. But if you don't see that, maybe you're thinking it doesn't happen at all. It might happen in the dressing room, it might happen vocally, but it seems to be something that's easy as fans to look at and see that is lacking.
So I agree that this team is not physical enough. I don't believe that they are. I wish that they had more of it. I guess I just don't like to make the indictments now because I know that they're good enough to put it together and win a whole bunch of playoff series. It's also kind of the dumbest thing to do or the easiest thing to do to say, well, this team can't win, because it's like, well, yeah, statistically, it's unbelievably hard to win. So if your position is this team can't win or this team can't win, you're going to end up being right the vast majority of the time. So I think it's kind of like the lamest take you can have. Like, of course they can win. Of course the Leafs can win. But them winning is not statistically probable. I wish they had more physicality on the back end. I see it as a problem some nights where teams just, you know, Toronto can outchance a team and they can dominate a team. They can have offensive zone possession. They can do all this, all that. And then all of a sudden, one of their defensemen puts it where the other team has two guys in the home plate area and they just bang one in and nobody's clearing the net front. And you go, well, yeah, that was worth 10 of the Leaf shots. Like, unless you get Austin Matthews clear with a strong wrister, that's about as good as it gets. And you're not getting those opportunities the same way. So I wish that that was better. I hope that they do address it. I think that it is the number one thing that they need to address. I'm just skeptical that it's going to be added. And so the discussions that I'm more interested in having are, well, how can they get better at the things that they're supposed to do well? And that's why I circle guys like Tavares right now. That's why I circle the blue line right now. Because like, there's ways I think that they can make incremental improvements there. I don't know if they can change over the course of a season what the quote-unquote grit or toughness is or some of these other things that you can't quantify as easily.
Kimmy from Bracebridge. The Leafs need to upgrade Kerfoot on the second line and drop him to the third line. It's sad to say Simmons is not effective in his role. Need to upgrade. Defense needs to upgrade Hall and Dermott.
Yeah.
Lots of things there. Yes.
That's just too many things to upgrade, though, Kimmy. That's just too many things, unfortunately. Like, they're not going to be able to get all those things done. Dubas mentioned that this team has limited assets that they can
use. You almost have to choose one.
Right. They don't have a million bullets. We just talked to Elliot Friedman yesterday. He said that they don't want to move their first-round pick. And frankly, it gets dangerous when you talk about moving all these first-round picks when you're already having salary cap issues. The Leafs need to be able to have players like Sandin come up and contribute immediately. There were a lot of people that believed Toronto needed to win their first cup before they hit the salary cap, and that was the only way that it was going to work. And, man, there's so far, it's pretty clear that it's harder to win this way. Like, finding a guy like Michael Bunting is a rarity. Being able to get a starting goaltender like of Jack Campbell's caliber, as much as we've complained about him, for a million-some bucks is an impossibility. So having those picks and being able to draft and develop is it's incredibly crucial for a salary cap league. So I get when they don't want to move those pieces. But bumping Kerfoot down, I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I would just say that if you're bumping
him down...
That third
line it's been so good, right?
It's been so good, but also if you're bumping Kerfoot even further down, you're saying now he's a third line winger and he's making $3.5 million on this team. Gotta go. You gotta find a way to move him out of town. You gotta find a neutral asset. The problem is that who's gonna trade you a neutral asset in a must win season that makes less money than Kerfoot? That doesn't make sense for anybody. So I don't know. It's just that's a really tough piece to move without agreeing that you're gonna take a step back from a win now standpoint. So then or what, you're gonna use those pieces to go out and get something else? I don't know. It's complicated. Are you sure that if you bump Mikheyev up there that it's going to be discernibly different or Kasha up there? It's worth a look because I think your second line is more important still than your third line and that as long as Kampf is there with one of those two, it should be okay. But yeah, I think what the main takeaway from that text is it feels like there are more problems right now than you would hope for a Stanley Cup contender that is winning this many games. Like, they have a lot of points, but they also have quite a few issues. And pretending that they don't by simply looking at the record and the overall success, I think is kind of foolish. But I also think over-exacerbating those is a little bit the same way.
And I think they're issues that, unfortunately, other teams can actually capitalize on. You know, like the defensive structure and the way that it's made up and how they can't handle pressure is something that in the playoffs will really make a difference. Not having strong goaltending is something another team is really going to capitalize on. Not having rah-rah leadership or having like the type of, you know,
we don't know about that stuff.
Like, we don't know. And how's the other team really gonna, you know, that's more of a makeup that the Leafs have to deal with. But I think those two things, especially when you look at if we want the Leafs to make it far in the playoffs, like if you're another team, you're seeing that as like, okay, I would love to match up the Leafs as long as they don't outscore us. It's easy for something to us for us to exploit. So I think that that's why this trade deadline seems even more imperative to like shore up something to feel very confident about something going into a lengthy playoff stretch. So I mean, no pressure was more about a month out from the trade deadline, a little bit less maybe.
Yeah, less, but. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not optimistic about this trade deadline either. If Dubas pulls off something incredible, then I will start calling the magician or whatever or those other things that people give. Because here's the thing. It isn't a spectacularly deep field this year. It doesn't look like an impossible season to win. Mm-hmm. Look at who's at the top right now. The Avalanche are the team that everyone's pointing to and saying is different than everyone else, right? The Lightning, I think, should be in that category because they get the respect as two-time defending champs and look at what they have in net and all those things. But after that, it doesn't feel like anybody's special. Like, the Panthers are leading the Eastern Conference in points right now. At least last I checked, is it them or the Hurricanes? Either way, it's like they're a point apart. They're like jockeying back and forth at the very top. At most, it's 2 points that the two teams are separated by. But there doesn't feel like a team that you can't beat this year. And hockey is always a sport where I think that it's easier for the depth of field to win. So you're looking at coming back from a pandemic where you lost a lot of gate and you lost a lot of revenue. And so fighting for a playoff position this year probably means more for the teams in the middle of the pack than even some years prior, right? Where you want to recoup assets for things. There hasn't been a particularly strong group of players that have been kicked around as available rentals or available in trades that I've seen yet anyways. Like, we're talking about some stretch
Klingberg
players.
Maybe.
Right. But that's
and
what I mean.
They're still coming back on that, being like, well, he was kind of floating around, but maybe now he won't move him. It's like, okay, well.
Yeah, maybe they won't move him. And if they do move him, that's what I'm saying. It's going to cost more to get a player like that in order for an organization to be saying, well, are we really not going to try to get into the playoffs and get some home dates? Are we really going to punt on the opportunity to get, you know, millions of dollars in our pockets? I don't know. That doesn't seem like a thing that greedy owners would want to do. it just, I don't see a real landscape where there's a ton out there for Toronto. Like, you get to pick from the Devils, you're not really going to trade with the Canadiens. You're probably not really going to trade with the Sabres. What you've already been dealing from all the Coyotes players, like, you've got three of them now. You waive two.
Yeah, what is this? Every time I look, it's another Coyotes trade.
Yeah, everybody wants Giordano from the Kraken. Like, that's not going to come cheap. So where else is the cheap labor or the good, effective player coming from? What organization? Look at the Central Division right now. Like, everybody's in it, except for the Coyotes.
Yeah, I just pulled it up, actually, and it's tight. You asked who is top of the Eastern Conference. It's Panthers. They have 75 points, but the Hurricanes have 74.
Yeah, like same games played, like a point or two.
Yeah, they're real close. Even like the Rangers and the Penguins are still like 69, 70 points.
Yeah,
it's tight.
There are a lot of decent teams, good teams. Mm-hmm. There just aren't great teams this year. There aren't teams that you absolutely are not going to beat. Like, Tampa Bay has been that for the last couple of years, and they've won. And maybe they are that again this year, but as of right now, not quite. And Colorado,
which will make it exciting come playoff time, but right now it makes it hard to imagine who's going to be a seller, you know?
Yeah, and I think Colorado is a better team than the Leafs. That seems to be pretty clear right now. But they're also not a team that I think is completely, like, they haven't won. They haven't made it to a Stanley Cup Finals. It's not like they're just this impossible juggernaut. Toronto went up head against them with no Marner and stood their ground just fine this year. So, I don't know. I'm not exactly terrified of the idea that they're the only ones that can win. I guess my point is like, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a buyer's market this year. And the Leafs are clearly buyers. So, take from that what you will.
Here's one from Sean. Hey guys, listened to the Sundin interview last week. It was great. Really enjoyed it. And with regards to JD calling him a man of mystery, it got me thinking Felix Potvin, who was my other childhood hero. Here seems like you never hear about him either. Wonder what he's up to.
Well, Felix, I have no idea, but
I just Googled it. Where is Felix Potvin now? Currently lives with his wife and his three children in Quebec, where he is the head coach for the midget AAA Magog Cantoniers, who plays second at the 2018 and 2019 TELUS Cup.
Uh-huh. I feel like...
Cool. Quiet guy.
No, but I think I've talked to Felix Potvin before, and that he's been on this, like, the station past or whatever. I don't know. You're right. I guess, like, he's not really in the public eye as often, but... Yeah, Sundin, the reason why I view this as kind of like a non-comparison is like, Potvin was my hero too. That's the reason why I became a goalie, and that was like one of my first sports loves. But Sundin was the face of this franchise for over a decade. Like, he has the most goals, the most points, you know, like, go down the list of records that he has for this team, and it's the most famous hockey team on the planet. And you rarely see the guy with the team. He's in Sweden, he's a dad. It's just, it's an odd thing for a guy of that stature to not be making money off that. Like, think about some of the faces of Toronto Blue Jays past that have stayed associated with the 92-93 teams, that have stayed associated with the city of Toronto. Like, you can get Joe Carter on, you can find out what he's up to. Getting Sundin on the radio, that's a one in a blue moon scenario. Getting him on TV, like, anything with him, an interview with him. Even when
and
I was
he loved
doing my
you,
interview
JD.
Prep. But when we were doing our interview prep, Ailish, how many articles did you find about Sundin, or how many things did you find out about Sundin?
Nothing.
He's literally a man of mystery. But he's just a hugely famous guy. Like, Felix Potvin could walk around Toronto. He'd get recognized by a few people, but nobody would. He wouldn't exactly just, like, everyone's flocking to him. Matt Sundin can't walk around Toronto. Like, legitimately cannot do it. So I just think it's a different, like, status of celebrity that makes it such an oddity to me. But yeah, it's
just
a
like
good
you.
Point. I don't know what he's up to. And I'll always love Felix Potvin, and I'm super jealous that Steve Dangle got one of his masks.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I know. It's like the thing I'm most jealous of on Earth is
if Dangle we keep inviting Steve on the show, maybe he'll
no
give
chance.
It to you in exchange for possession. One of your skulls in your house.
I'd literally have to take his skull to get that mask. That's the only way that he'd give that to me. We'll see you tomorrow. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. It's JD Bunkus. It's Sailors Four Far. We're back with Blake Murphy tomorrow. See you then.